The pastimes of Lord Krishna are of a purely transcendental nature. It is said that Bhagavan, Bhakti, and Bhakta are all transcendental and should never be considered mundane. So Krishna is transcendental, his service to him is transcendental, and his devotees are transcendental. So that is in itself a very valuable meditation, because we don't always see like that. Not so easy to see Krishna's devotees as transcendental. Krishna transcendental, all right, we can accept. Yes. Devotional service, yes, but devotees, some, or sometimes. So, but Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentions, no, all transcendental, Bhagavan, Bhakti, and Bhakta. That means, yes, devotees are transcendental. So that's the beginning. It is through the devotees that in this world we become aware of devotional service, that we become aware of Krishna. Otherwise, how can we appreciate and celebrate the glories of Krishna? That is not possible. Although in the more exalted regions of the universe, the demigods are absorbed in glorifying Krishna. They are aware of Krishna and they're celebrating Krishna's qualities. Still, they also see another reality. They see Krishna's reality in their own reality. We also tend to see two realities, the material world and then the spiritual world. And yeah, which one do we like best? Well, sometimes the spiritual and sometimes the material. That is the situation. That is the difficulty. So we are in between the material and the spiritual world. As much as we are looking for happiness in the material world, that is as much as we are blocked from entering into the spiritual world. Because Naham Prakasa Sarvasa Yoga Maya Samavitra, that here in the material world there is the illusory energy of Krishna, and that illusory energy covers the living being and therefore makes it impossible to see Krishna. It is also said that Krishna that is herding the cows, and that the hoofs of all those calves and cows are throwing up dust in the air. And that the result is that Krishna's pastimes are covered by darkness. So they cannot just be seen or approached by anyone and everyone. No, it is not possible. So we are looking for purification. Srila Prabhupada once gave a definition of purification, and he said that by nature, every living being has a loving propensity. Everyone loves something. So many things we love. Maybe the place of our birth, this land, my grandparents, my ancestors, my grandparents, my parents. We were all born here, the same place. We love. So there is love. I think even the name of Ljubljana is related to love, right? At least I heard something like this long ago. So love is there in all of us, in everyone. But Prabhupada is saying purification means that that love goes towards Krishna until there is no space for anything else. All love is with Krishna. Not that we only love Krishna and no one else, but we love everyone else in relation with Krishna. Like sometimes we say that you can look your beloved in the eyes and say, "You are the dearmost to me after Krishna." Very romantic. Yes. It is a fact that only then do relationships work, when Krishna is put in the foreground, when the relationship with Krishna is established first, that he is the most important. That's how it works. That is Vrindavan. When Krishna walks in Vrindavan, Madhava carrying his flute tucked in his belt, then the trees which have branches laden with fruits and flowers, these branches are trying to touch Krishna's feet. The bees are just singing. They're singing the glories of Krishna. Bhagavatam says these bees must have been great sages in their last life to be bees. The trees are thinking that we are so unfortunate. It is due to our sinful activities that we have taken birth as trees, and that therefore we cannot follow Krishna on his pastimes in the forest. Of course, Bhagavatam points out that Lord Brahma is praying to become a tree in Vrindavan. So how can it be that they have committed sinful activities or offenses? Rather, these trees are the most fortunate. Because after all, one moment of association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who walks past, one moment of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, what great fortune. And if even only sometimes Krishna walks past those trees, still they're in that forest of Vrindavan. They may not be able to walk behind him, but they can hear. They can hear, because it is stated in the Mahabharata that trees have ears and eyes. In case we didn't know, it is said that trees can see and trees can hear. So these trees are hearing and seeing Krishna. So quite auspicious, actually. They're better off than we are. We may be able to move around very fast. Some on motorbikes flying around like madmen. Yes, at what Prabhupada used to call neck-breaking speed. Yes. But in New York, Prabhupada was saying, the cars, they are going from here, they're going there and everywhere, but not making any progress. Not making any progress. Because all our energy is not directed towards Krishna. So much energy from the morning till the night. Everyone gets up. So much noise. A group of people. Incredible how much noise. Just a village, you can hear it on the distance. A city, even more noisy. New York. In New York there is a noise, it's called the rumble. The rumble is a sound something like. This is always heard in New York. It's called the rumble. So, noisy places, so much noise. All symptoms of energy, so much energy. Wasted. So, Krishna is the is the source of all pleasure. Krishna is the only source of pleasure. Nowhere else, nothing else actually is pleasure. Prabhupada explains in the material world there is happiness and distress, pain and pleasure. But actually, he says that the pleasure in the material world is worse than the suffering.
Well,
I mean,
really?
That's sometimes a little difficult to understand the point. The Prabhupada's point is, it is worse than the suffering, because when we suffer in the material world, then we are sure, I want to get out of here, I want to go back to Godhead. But when we are enjoying it in the material world, then we think, well, actually, I mean, to be honest, material life is not so bad. Actually, this world is quite nice. Summertime. And then we forget. So when we are enjoying in the material world, we are simply forgetting. Prabhupada walked and saw a children's playground, and he pointed with his cane and said, children's playground. Then he turned around, pointed to the city, said, adults' playground. So like this, we are playing, we are spending our time with toys, little toys, big toys, but what is the difference? Just toys. Some men are working with big machines, you know, playing with toys. So the material energy is offering us so many ways to keep on playing, endless varieties, and all useless, useless. So this is the first principle, that we cannot approach Krishna as long as we are covered. We were reading about Dainikasura, who is a demon killed by Balaram, and it is explained that Dainikasura appeared in the form of an ass or a donkey, because it is said he was carrying a big burden on his back. Right. As donkeys do, and carrying a big burden of ignorance, a burden first of all of sin, and carrying a large burden of sin, a big burden of karmic reactions, a big burden of material desire, a big burden of speculation, a big burden of independence, misused independence, and therefore a big burden of ignorance, actually. So Dainikasura in this way was representing ignorance to some find. Ignorance due to previous karma, ignorance due to bad habits, ignorance due to material desires, ignorance due to speculation, like this. So, therefore, he was not able to appreciate Krishna. So that is the situation with anyone who is covered by ignorance. We also were like that. Most people, the first time they saw devotees, thought that, this is too strange. Few people, they immediately thought, oh, this is nice, but most thought. So like this, we are not able to just overcome our material conditioning. Not by our own strength, but it is by the devotees, by the transcendental devotees who are in this world, that somehow or other we become changed and transformed. and its devotees that are coming through this world and that glorify Krishna, that are changing people, that are creating awareness of Krishna, awakening attraction to Krishna, like that. It is not difficult at all to spread Krishna consciousness. It is not. It is not difficult to make devotees, because everyone is already a devotee. So it's not like, how are we going to make devotees in this place? It's going to be very, very difficult. What shall we do? Maybe should we disguise ourselves as locals? No need for such difficult maneuvers. One of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, Amarendra, was a lawyer. And as a lawyer, he was trained to fight. That's what lawyers do. They always fight. So he had a fighting spirit. And it's like, you know, and lawyers don't just fight with weapons, they fight with words. They are expert at words. So he said, Prabhupada, what can we say? What can we say to convince them? What arguments can we give to convince them? Prabhupada said, just chant Hare Krishna. Just chant Hare Krishna. There's no need for any complicated argument. Wherever there is chanting Hare Krishna, there Krishna consciousness will spread. Ramananda was the other day explaining how he was the first one to bring Krishna consciousness to Brazil, because they did Harinam on the airport in Rio. And they were chanting, and some people liked it. And some people were clapping and liked it. And so, as soon as he saw, he said he knew Krishna consciousness will spread all over Brazil. And of course it did, because now there's more than 10 temples and many devotees in Brazil. It all begins with that, with the chanting of the holy name, with devotional service, with simply offering devotional service, attracting people with prasadam and engaging them with service, and automatically worship of Krishna begins. So the spiritual world is there, the world where Krishna eternally resides. That spiritual world also manifests here on this planet, and when Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, it was there also fully manifest, and Krishna manifested his mercy. It is said, only in the material world is Krishna showing childhood pastimes. In the spiritual world, Krishna is never a child. He's always a youth. But here, in the material world, Krishna becomes a child and performs these pastimes. It said, in the first 5 years of his life, Krishna, his lotus feet were still very soft, so the footprints in the sand were not so clear. The lines on his feet were not so clear, and therefore the marks on Krishna's feet were not so prominent. But then, on his sixth year, Krishna started to herd the cows, and Krishna and Balaram at that time were inseparable, and they'd always be together. And everywhere Vrindavan was graced by their footprints, which then became very clear. At that time, the marks became more and more clear and visible, and all of Vrindavan became covered in the marks of Krishna's lotus feet. So the mercy of the spiritual world, the activities of Krishna are going on non-stop somewhere. There's always a universe where Krishna appears, where Krishna performs his pastimes. But for us, that's just not so too simple. To come to that point where we can fully absorb ourselves in these eternal pastimes of Krishna, very difficult, just very difficult. The mind is too restless. Therefore, what is much easier for us is to begin where we are, here, in this world. And in this world, get active, get very active, engaged in working with the material energy and offer it to Krishna. That we can do. Take a hammer and bang, that we know how to do, or cook up something and that we can do, or alright, you know, clean a floor, we can do, drive a car, we can do. So in this way, Prabhupada, generally speaking, placed the emphasis there. Sometimes Prabhupada would speak about Krishna and Balaram walking majestically in the forest of Vrindavan, being worshipped by that entire forest. And then Krishna taking a humble position and saying, look, Balaram, the trees are bowing down to your feet. And although he knew very well that the trees were bowing down at his feet, but Krishna also is not claiming glory for himself. So these are the features of the spiritual world. And we hear glimpses, and otherwise we are here. And really, our spiritual life for now is here. Is very much engaged in doing things here. It's devotees who take up service here, who become active here. They are the ones. They are the ones that become eligible to go back to the spiritual world. It begins with becoming very actively engaged. Hearing and chanting about Krishna, yes. But who can do only hearing and chanting? It's difficult. Difficult for one. With restless minds and restless senses. Prabhupada said that actually there was no need. There was no need to have so many temples and so many activities. He said we could have also simply spent time hearing and chanting as a means of preaching. But he pointed out that we couldn't do this. We just couldn't do it. We were not peaceful enough. And Prabhupada said, therefore he created so much engagement. Prabhupada also explained that there are three platforms. The sensual, the mental, and the intellectual platform. It also happens to correspond with these parts of the hand. And if the hand is reddish at the top, then you're on the intellectual platform. If it's reddish in the middle, you're on the mental platform. And if it's reddish at the bottom, you're on the sensual platform. And if it's all reddish, then you're completely agitated. Or you're even sitting on your hands. What is like this? But it's interesting that mental and the intellectual platform. You cannot just hear and chant all day when, you know, when yesterday we're completely on the sensual platform. My senses, and then it's not possible. Right? We all come from the sensual platform. All the energy used to be there, and now suddenly we're supposed to be like just on the spiritual platform, or at least down the intellectual platform, meditating on Krishna. Meditating like anything on the senses. How long have we been? It's just even while chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, sounds gratification. Krishna, Krishna, sounds gratification. Thousands of times, such thoughts come to our mind of a sense enjoyment. Therefore, we must engage the senses, very simple. But you can see, the nectar of devotion is exactly describing that. It's describing how we engage the senses. That's why, you know, they always come with that flower, right? Personally, in the temple, someone comes up, puts this flower, sometimes in your nose, not just under the nose, but it's actually in your nose. But that's very good, because the senses become purified in this way. So it is said that we must engage all the senses, the scent, the sight. We look at the deities again and again, again and again, and each time it leaves an impression in the consciousness. Prabhupada said to Jayananda, he told Jayananda, he said, at the end of your life, all the activities of your life, the highlights of your life, will play in front of your eyes like a movie. So, and then when it comes to the picture of Jagannath on his Rath cart, so it will stop there. It will stop. That movie will just stop there. So Jagannath will stay and take you back to the spiritual world. So it is mentioned in the Anjana Parati that the deity that we worship will come at the end of our life to take us back. So this is very nice. So it's not just a ritual taking the deities, but the deities that we worship will come. They'll be there at the time of leaving the body. Can be. If we... But many things like that happened to devotees. We know stories about... particularly there's a story about Sudama. Sudama who was... became a sannyasi and everything, but then after that he had a period that he was not so faithful to his vows and so on, and he in due course of time also captured one of those diseases that make you die very fast, and in due course of time he left his body. This is after he left his body up. He fell down already during Prabhupada's time and left his body after Prabhupada. And then it is said some devotees were there at the end of his life with him. In his final days, devotees had come to him, had been with him, and had tried to help him to be Krishna conscious. And he tried, but for a long time he hadn't done anything. And then suddenly, the devotees saw Sudama sat up in bed. He's lying down, he sat up in bed, and he said, "Prabhupada, you have come." So there are many stories like that, you know, about devotees who somehow or other had some extraordinary experience at the end of their life. So yes, can be for us also. maybe we have to do something. We have to do something to attract a little bit of attention. That is something you have to remember, that it's personal. You know, Prabhupada doesn't have to come with everybody, but he can come with some. You hear this story in Mayapur about Lord Nisringadev, and that they had given him yellow stones, cat's eyes, for his as eyes, yellow stones. So Lord Nisringadev didn't like it, right? And this Mataji, was there, right? And standing in front of the deities, and suddenly the deities started to speak. Said, "I want my eyes back." Who's speaking? "I want my eyes back." Deity, can't be true. "Tell the pujaris that I want my eyes back." She's like, all shocked, oh God, why is this happening to me? And, will they believe me? When I said all kinds of crazy thoughts. But when she told the pujaris, they understood, right? Because they knew that recently the eyes had been changed, from the reddish eyes to these yellow stones given by some wealthy man. So then they put the eyes back. And but the point is that I stood so many times in front of the deity, Swami, Danda, everything. He never spoke to me. He just spoke to some Mataji, you know what I mean? What is this? So you never know. You just never know. That's my point. He may speak to you, I mean, you don't have to have a Danda, you don't have to be famous. The Lord may speak to you, or to me. He might speak to me too, why not? He's very merciful. I hope he'll speak to me. You rascal. I know. Sorry for that. Yeah, that would be wonderful. If somehow or other we could get that mercy of Krishna. So Krishna is there in this reality with us, where we are now. We cannot jump out of this reality. It is not possible. Even hearing, our capacity for hearing is not so great. Even chanting, our rounds are not so great. Even in the temple, sometimes we think, well, the temple is not so great. Even when we are with devotees, we think, well, what kind of devotees are these? Maybe some devotees are transcendental, but not these ones. Like this, we cannot see. We remain covered. But Krishna is there. And Krishna is with us. And Krishna is helping us. Krishna is revealing himself from time to time. Krishna takes initiatives. Krishna arranges things in people's lives. Nasyamya Bhava Stavu, it is said he is hiding within the consciousness. In the Bhagavad Gita, there is that verse, Tesam evanukam partam aham akyana jantamaha Nasyamya Bhava Stavu kyan dipena vashrata. It is said that Krishna, with the torchlight of transcendental knowledge, is enlightening his devotees, and said he is like waiting in the consciousness. He's hiding there. And whenever he sees a little inclination, he will manifest himself. He will do something. So this is actually the reality. Sometimes it seems that devotees become very, very advanced. But really, true advancement is easy to recognize by dedication to Prabhupada. When we see that in our movement devotees become very advanced, that advancement will show in being a dedicated servant of Prabhupada, because really, there's no one like him, you know, no one that much absorbed in Krishna, no one that much naturally Krishna conscious. But by serving him, by serving Prabhupada, yes, then our Krishna consciousness can really develop very naturally. So this is for everyone.
The strength, our own spiritual strength, is really depending on that.
What will we do for Prabhupada? Yeah. When we see like these devotees of the early days, they had something special. So a few days ago I was not so healthy and wasn't able to do much, so at that stage I watch videos. What else to do? When there's nothing you can do, then you can sit in front of a computer and zombie it out, and meanwhile watch a video. So I did it. And so I watched some private memories, and at one point I saw Guru Kripa. And of course, Guru Kripa, I know him well, because he's of course connected to Vrindavan, and we meet him there. And Guru Kripa, he is a tough dude. He's tough. You can see it when you see him, you know. The way he speaks, you know, deep voice, square jaw, you know, the kind of guy, you know, you don't want to mess with. You know what I mean? Yeah. Guru Kripa. So Guru Kripa used to be tough. But he was also ready to do something, and that was like it. That's his saving grace, because on one occasion Prabhupada was speaking and he was explaining to Guru Kripa that his health was really not good and so on, and he said, you know,
Prabhupada said,
my feet are swelling, and he said, you know, and my teeth are getting loose. He said it is the first sign of death. But, you know, but Prabhupada said, but I first really want to, I still want to do some things. How do you want to say? I want to finish first this Bombay project. Later it was written down. So, and then Prabhupada said, yeah, but you know, I just don't know how to do it. It's like such a problem because I have no money, he said. And then he said, some of my disciples, they have money, but they're not giving it to me. And then Guru Kripa, you know, sort of was led into the trap by Prabhupada. Because Prabhupada was sort of talking, disciples have money, but they're not giving. So then Guru Kripa sort of was thinking, well, I'm also a disciple, Prabhupada. I will give you money. And Prabhupada said, oh, you will give me money? And then he said, yes, Prabhupada, I will give you whatever you need. And then Prabhupada said, oh, okay. That's very nice. And then Guru Kripa was thinking, what did I say? I said, I'll give him whatever I need. And then Prabhupada wanted $100,000 a month. and he did it. He went out collecting, set up a whole collection party, etc. And went out to collect all that money and then sending it to Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada was saying, like, you know, is he robbing banks? How is he getting all this money? He said, no, I wasn't robbing banks. I wasn't robbing banks. So in this way,
somehow or another, these devotees, they did it, you know. I mean, they did it. Not so easy, you know, just a small thing, you know, like sort of, okay, I'll give you money, Prabhupada, yeah, but like, you know, but I can, of course, you know. No. You said it. Well, I mean, you know, yeah, it slipped out of my mouth. You know. No, that's not good. You said it. Okay. Well, yes, I said it. Then you must keep your word. And then he kept his word. Yeah. For that, he'll go back to Godhead. For keeping his word. You see? So that, for something like that, you go back to Godhead. Yeah. It is the, it is that which attracts special mercy. Guru Kripa was, as I said, always a tough character. So, you know, one time he came to see Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was staying upstairs in the room, and there was a secretary, one of Prabhupada's secretaries, and the secretary had just been told by Prabhupada that, you know, the schedule, there was a schedule and that Prabhupada should take some rest. So the secretary came up and said, sorry, but you really, where are you going? Guru Kripa said, I'm going to see Prabhupada. He said, no, you can't see Prabhupada now, right? Because he's not seeing anyone at the moment, he needs the rest. So Guru Kripa said, get out of the way. Or I throw you down the stairs. Which is not exactly what you call your Vaishnava Vanshakalpa's type of exchange, right? According to the handbook of Vaishnava etiquette. I know, it's not, you know. It's not. But in the secretary, you could see also the square jaw and the expression on his face, so he decided to step aside. And Guru Kripa went into Prabhupada's room, and as soon as Prabhupada saw him, he said, oh, Guru Kripa! Oh, I'm so happy to see you. Please come in.
Guru Kripa looked back. See?
But, so these rough edges were there, and for these rough edges, you know, like Krishna, sometimes, for rough dealings, keeps someone bound in the material world. But then, for keeping one's word to Prabhupada so faithfully, then Prabhupada will surely take him back. Yeah. Surely. Yeah. Because that shows, that's more than duty. That's love. You know? That's devotional service beyond duty. That is devotional service, where he said, whatever you desire, that I will do. And in duty, we think, well, you know, how much do you have to do to get the mercy? Yeah? I mean, 5 days a week, devotional service? If I come 5 days a week, is that enough? You know? Yeah? And if I live far away, even once a week, if I come faithfully every Sunday, if I miss, is that enough? Chaitanya and Panchatattva are very merciful. So in this way, one is calculating. But that kind of calculation will not do. Maybe, yes, some will come once a week and go back to Godhead. Others not. Why not? Because some did it, struggled to do it, but somehow or other really wanted to do it and did it. And others, you know, just thought like, well, you know, I mean, you know, this is good enough. This is good enough. So, that spirit of wholeheartedly serving Krishna with the heart, that is really what is required. You know, so many times we hear now, change from the heart, you know, okay? I mean, chant from the heart, chant from the heart, chant from the heart. I don't know, I can't always chant from the heart. I have my moments that it works and my moments that it doesn't work. Yeah? If I sit in a kirtan and chant from the heart, sometimes I can't. just doesn't work. It can't connect. And other times, yes, it's just flowing. It just comes. But when it comes to crying tears of separation, when you hear beautiful stories about Krishna, mostly doesn't work. Okay? Mostly I don't cry so much. But when I see that Krishna consciousness reaches people under very difficult circumstances, who are poor and who have been denied a decent existence, and I see that Krishna consciousness reaches them, then I get sentimental. So whatever it is, we are not not so easily absorbed in Krishna's pastimes. A little curious sometimes about some things. But on our own level, if we just do something, some service for Prabhupada and Krishna, then we will go back to God, back to the spiritual, to this life. Okay, any questions?
Thank you, Maharaj, for coming here so early. I would like to ask you, because I read from your jurors about the Holy Name, your experience with the Holy Name, and I read it also that always you take time for chanting on the japa, and this is only your time for you and Krishna and no matter what else is going on. So can you please explain how did you, learn, or the mind that this time is only for japa, nothing else? How you develop this attitude, this taste for the
job? Well, I don't know if it immediately went to the level of taste, but I think that to go back to Godhead means something to me. That all along, that point hit home with me before anything. I'm thinking, yes, I think I want to go back to Godhead this life. And that's one reason why I joined. I didn't just join from, a nice movement, and I like the halva, and maybe I should just stay. I had a distinct reason why I joined. I joined because I really felt, yes, this idea of getting out of this material world, yes, let's get out of here. I've had enough. I'm ready to go. So that's where it began with me. And from there, I wanted to be serious about the things that were good for that. Chanting and principles and so on. Not that I thought it was difficult. I thought the four regulative principles were almost impossible, especially some of them, but I kind of did it because I didn't want to lose the opportunity to go back to Godhead. When it came to chanting, I very quickly became involved in management, practically right away. After I joined Vrindavan, I very quickly became involved in organizing things and so on. And then people were always following me around and always wanting things. So I had to fight for my my japa. And so, okay, and I decided to do that, you know. And I just told everyone, forget it, you know. Now I chant, and that's it. So I protected my rounds that time, externally. And then I tried, still doing that, yeah. That doesn't mean that you... So externally we can put the time in place for chanting japa. Externally we can give it priority. Sometimes sangha say, this is for chanting. Whenever I had to chant lots of rounds in the day, then I would go on long walks. Because if you had 10 rounds left, then if I would walk 5 rounds away from the temple, then I just turn around and then the other 5 are also there. So I would take long walks. Somehow or other, I try to protect the chanting, but that doesn't mean that I was able to penetrate, to actually meet Krishna face to face in the chanting. I'm still trying for that. And sometimes better and sometimes worse. So, you know, like one person who spent a lot of time with japa and japa reform is Sasarup Maharaj. He wrote japa reform notebook, and he still writes something called the Yellow Submarine. You can look on the internet, Yellow Submarine, and you will find Sasarup Maharaj's blog where he puts things about chanting. And that's been his lifetime focus, you know, like somehow or other to improve his chanting. And he wrote one thing which I liked one day. There was a book called Japa Walks, Japa Talks, and there he wrote that he said, for so many years I've been trying to correct my chanting, improve the quality, be more attentive, and be fighting this and that to chant attentively. He said, Today, I'm looking at an Indian villager, and this Indian villager is just chanting his rounds without being very conscious. He just chants them. He doesn't try to chant so nicely. He just chants them. Right? He said, "Today, I'm going to chant like that." So I like that Indian villager. Just chant, just chant. Don't make it so mental. Just chant and chant and chant. Faithfully. Yeah. Faithfully. Because, all right, I have useless concentration. Really, you know. It's like, I'm not the best in chanting Gayatris either. It's like mental chanting is not easy. I get mental when I chant the mantra. Or where was I? Sometimes I've had it that I lost where I was, I fell asleep, started again, fell asleep again, started again, fell asleep again. Try 10 minutes later. It can be tough. So when it comes to sadhana, I confess herewith that I'm not very good at it. But I want to be faithful. Faithfully do it as good as I can, being a poor Kali Yuga man. But as good as I can, I'll do it. And I hope that Panchitattva and everyone, Prabhupada, someone say, all right then, he tried. Any other questions?
I just spoke about this restlessness of the mind.
Yeah.
In the senses. Will this be someday in the future subsidized, or how to come to that point? Or
the restlessness of the mind. The restlessness of the mind, will it be diminished over time? Will it be brought under control? Will it be conquered? Will it disappear?
What is the
prognosis? It's a matter of redirecting it. Just as the camera, right? Now it's on me. At least I think so. Maybe not. It looks like that. But, so the mind is like that. The mind is like a television. And on this television, there is our favorite program. And it's called Starring Me. And it's a series. It's a series. It goes on and on and on. It's got so many episodes. It's just, and there you are again, that's me. On a horse, in a car, on a boat, on the beach, summertime, wintertime. Me when I was a kid, me when I was old. Me, starring me. So this TV series in the mind, it goes on and on and on. So one must try not to look at it. A devotee tries not to look at that. Yeah, at the starring TV series. So it's like, it's hard. Especially while chanting, we're trying not to look at it. It's like chanting with a television that's in the room and it's on at the same time. It's very hard.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Ram, Ram, Ram. Hare Krishna, Krishna, Ram, Ram, Ram.
It's very hard. But anyway, when we sincerely try, yes, then one day when we look at that, in the midst of our chanting, when we look up, Krishna may be on the screen. So like that, it's a matter of redirecting. The mind will still be the mind, you know what I mean? Still one variety, one different things, you know what I mean? But gradually we'll become more and more Krishna. All right, read a little bit Bhagavatam. Okay, let's chant some bhajans. Okay, let's do some service. Maybe we will not read 12 hours of Krishna book at a stretch. But with variety, little by little, Krishna, 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 more Krishna. So in that way, the restlessness of the mind is tamed when it's connected to Krishna. And then there's so many varieties, so the mind can still go here and there. Krishna's lotus feet, lotus eyes. Nails of mother of pearl, just like a doorway. Thighs like tree trunks, or like the trunks of an elephant. Big bandles. So many things to remember about. So some, they think that that you must go very deep in one detail, right? And that's real absorption. So now we're getting really advanced when we absorb Krishna's lotus feet and it's sort of and of course, there are descriptions how Lord Chaitanya would go in a particular mood, right, and stay in that mood
for 9 hours. And that Sri Damodar would sing the same line of a bhajan for 9 hours to kind of support that mood.
So yes, there is that kind of absorption on one detail. But it can also be that one looks at Krishna's beautiful face, Krishna's beautiful lotus hands, and all that's fine. As long as it's Krishna, that's good enough. Look at the deities. So we can have a lot of change for our minds. In that way, our restless minds can be tamed. And that's enough. I think sometimes we try to make it more difficult than it is. Just therefore, if we stay engaged, then we're always busy with serving Krishna. Always thoughts of Krishna will come. The idle mind is the devil's workshop. That's one of Prabhupada's favorite sayings. That means when there's nothing, when we have nothing to do, then we start thinking of Maya. But when we're busy, no time for Maya. Maya, tomorrow. Hey, this kind of some enjoyment, sense enjoyment, really good. Yeah. Come. Tomorrow, too busy today. It's Jamastami, there's no time. After Jonas. Then there's the cleanup, No time. It goes on and on. So that's the trick, to be busy. That's why the temple should have a lot of programs, a lot of plans, a lot of preaching, a lot of things, so that everyone's extremely busy.